I frown. I don't think we're intense. She shoots me a funny look. I'm serious, I say. I think we have a pretty normal friendship. Instead of answering me, she says, Did you two ever... She waves a hand at nothing. Date? What? My eyes widen. A traitorous heat floods my body. No.
Never?
She says, her smile slow. Never. I swear, not even close.
Okay.
Not that there's anything wrong with him, I hurry to add. Kenji is wonderful. The right person would be lucky to be with him. Nazira laughs softly. She carries the stack of pillows and blankets over to the row of airplane seats and begins reclining the backs. I watch her as she works. There's something so smooth and refined about her movements, something intelligent in her eyes at all times. It makes me wonder what she's thinking, what she's planning, why she's here at all. Suddenly, she sighs. She's not looking at me when she says,
Do you remember me yet?
I raise my eyebrows, surprised. Of course, I say quietly. She nods. She says,
I've been waiting a while for you to catch up.
And sits down, inviting me to join her by patting the seat next to her. I do. Wordlessly, she hands me a couple of blankets and pillows. And then, when we're both settled in and I'm staring, suspiciously, at the vacuum-sealed package of food she threw at me, I say, So you remember me too? Nazira tears open her vacuum-sealed package, peers inside to study the contents.
Emmeline guided me to you,
she says quietly.
The memories, the messages, it was her.
I know, I say. She's trying to unify us. She wants us to band together. Nazira shakes out the contents of the bag into her hand, picks through the bits of freeze-dried fruit. She glances at me.
You were 5 when you disappeared, she says. Emmeline was 6. I'm 6 months older than you, and 6 months younger than Emmeline.
I nod. The 3 of us used to be best friends. Nazira looks away. Looks sad.
I really loved Emmeline, she says.
We were inseparable. We did everything together.
She shrugs, even as a flash of pain crosses her face.
That was all we got. Whatever we might have been was stolen from us.
She picks out 2 pieces of fruit and pops them into her mouth. I watch as she chews thoughtfully and wait for more. But the seconds pass and she says nothing. And I figure I should fill the silence. So, I say, we're not actually getting any sleep, are we? That gets her to smile. Still, she doesn't look at me. Finally, she says,
I know you and Warner got the absolute worst of it, I do. But if it makes you feel any better, they wiped all of our memories in the beginning.
I know, Emmeline told me.
They didn't want us to remember you, she says. They didn't want us to remember a lot of things. Did Emmeline tell you she's reached out to all of us? You, me, Warner, my brother, all the kids.
She told me a little bit, yeah. Have you talked to any of the others about it? Nazira nods, pops another piece of fruit in her mouth. And? She tilts her head.
We'll see.
My eyes widen. What does that mean?
I'll know more when we land. That's all.
So how did you even know, I say, frowning a little. If you'd only ever had memories of me and Emmeline as children, how did you tie it all back to the present? How did you know that I was Ella from our childhood?
You know, I wasn't 100% positive I was right about everything until I saw you at dinner that first night on base.
You recognized me, I say, from when I was 5?
No.
She says, and nods at my right hand,
from the scar on the back of your wrist.
This, I say, lifting my hand. And then I frown, remembering that Evie repaired my skin. I used to have faded scars all over my body. The ones on my hands were the worst. My adoptive mom put my hands in the fire once. And I hurt myself a lot while I was locked up. Lots of burns, lots of poorly healed wounds. I shake my head at Nazira when I say, I used to have scars on my hand from my time in the asylum. Evie got rid of them. Nazira takes my hand, flips it over so my palm is up, open. Carefully, she traces a line from my wrist to my forearm.
Do you remember the one that was here?
Yes, I raise my eyebrows.
My dad has a really extensive sword collection, she says, dropping my hand. Really gorgeous blades, gilded, handmade, ancient, ornate stuff. Anyway, she says, tapping the invisible scar on my wrist, I did that to you. I broke into my dad's sword room and thought it'd be fun for us to practice a little hand-to-hand combat. But I sliced you up pretty bad, and my mom just about beat the crap out of me. She laughs. I will never forget that.
I frown at her, at where my scar used to be. Didn't you say that we were friends when we were five? She nods. We were five, and we thought it would be fun to play with real swords? She laughs, looks confused.
I never said we had a normal childhood. Our lives were so messed up, she says, and laughs again. I never trusted my parents. I always knew they were knee-deep in some dark shit. I always tried to learn more. I'd been trying for years to hack into Baba's electronic files, she says. And for a long time, I only ever accessed basic information. I learned about the asylums, the unnaturals.
That's why you hid your abilities from them, I say, finally understanding. She nods.
But I wanted to know more. I knew I was only scratching the surface of something big. But the levels of security built into my dad's account are unlike anything I'd ever seen before. I was able to get through the first few levels of security, which is how I learned of yours and Emmeline's existence a few years back. Baba had tons of records, reports on your daily habits and activities, a log with the time and date of every memory they stole from you, and they were all from recent years and months.
I gasp. Nazira shoots me a sympathetic look.
There were brief mentions of a sister in your files, she says.
But nothing substantial. Mostly just a note that you were both powerful and had been donated to the cause by your parents. But I couldn't find anything on the unknown sister, which made me think that her files were more protected. I spent the last couple of years trying to break into the deeper levels of Baba's account and never had any success. So, I let it go for a while. She pops another piece of dried fruit in her mouth. It wasn't until my dad started losing his mind after you almost killed Anderson that I started getting suspicious. That was when I began to wonder if the Juliet Ferrars he kept screaming about wasn't someone important. She studies me out of the corner of her eye.
I knew you couldn't have been some random unnatural. I just knew it. Baba went ballistic, so I started hacking again.
Wow, I say.
Yeah,
she says, nodding. Right?
Anyway, all I'm trying to say is that I've been trying to sniff out the bullshit in this situation for a few years, and now, with Emmeline in my head, I'm finally getting close to figuring it all out.
I glance up at her.
The only thing I still don't know is why Emmeline is locked up. I don't know what they're doing with her, and I don't understand why it's such a secret.
I do, I say. Her head snaps up. She looks at me wide-eyed.
Way to bury the lead, Ella.
I laugh, but the sound is sad.
Warner. As soon as we take our seats, Kenji turns on me. You want to tell me what the hell is going on? He says. No. Kenji rolls his eyes. He rips open his little snack bag and doesn't even inspect the contents before he tips the bag directly into his mouth. He closes his eyes as he chews, makes little satisfied noises. I manage to fight the impulse to cringe, but I can't stop myself from saying, You eat like a caveman. No, I don't. He says angrily, and then a moment later, Do I? I hesitate, feeling his sudden wave of embarrassment. Of all the emotions I hate experiencing, secondhand embarrassment might be the worst. It hits me right in the gut, makes me want to turn my skin inside out. And it's by far the easiest way to make me capitulate. No, I say heavily. You don't eat like a caveman. That was unfair. Kenji glances at me. There's too much hope in his eyes. I've just never seen anyone eat food with as much enthusiasm as you do. Kenji raises an eyebrow. I'm not enthusiastic. I'm hungry. Carefully, I tear open my own package, shake out a few bits of the fruit into my open hand. They look like desiccated worms. I return the fruit to the bag, dust off my hands, and offer my portion to Kenji. You sure? He says, even as he takes it from me. I nod. He thanks me. We both say nothing for a while. So, Kenji says finally, still chewing. You were going to propose to her. Wow. I exhale a long, heavy breath. How you could have even known something like that? Because I'm not deaf? I raise my eyebrows. It echoes in here. It certainly does not echo in here. Stop changing the subject, he says, shaking more fruit into his mouth. The point is, you were going to propose. Do you deny it? I look away, run a hand along the side of my neck, massaging the sore muscles. I do not deny it, I say. Then congratulations, and yes, I'd be happy to be your best man at the wedding. I look up, surprised. I have no interest in addressing the latter part of what you just said, but why offer congratulations? I thought you were vehemently opposed to the idea. Kenji frowns. What? I'm not opposed to the idea. Then why were you so angry? I thought you were stupid for doing it here, he says. Right now. I didn't want you to do something you would regret. That you'd both regret. Why would I regret proposing right now? This seems as good a time as any. Kenji laughs, but somehow manages to keep his mouth closed. He swallows another bite of food and says, Don't you want to, like, I don't know, buy her some roses? Light a candle? Maybe hand her a box of chocolates or some shit? Or, hell, I don't know, maybe you'd want to get her a ring first? I don't understand. Come on, bro. Have you never seen, like, a movie? No. Kenji stares at me, dumbfounded. You're shitting me, he says. Please tell me you're shitting me. I bristle. I was never allowed to watch movies growing up, so I never picked up the habit. And after the reestablishment took over, that sort of thing was outlawed anyway. Besides, I don't enjoy sitting still in the dark for that long. And I don't enjoy the emotional manipulations of cinema. Kenji brings his hands to his face, his eyes wide with something like horror. You have got to be kidding me. Why would... I don't understand why that's strange. I was homeschooled. My father was very... There are so many things about you that never made sense to me, Kenji says, staring flabbergasted at the wall behind me. Like, everything about you is weird, you know? No, I say sharply. I don't think I'm weird. But now it all makes sense, he shakes his head. It all makes so much sense. Wow. Who knew? What makes sense? Kenji doesn't seem to hear me. Instead, he says, Hey, is there anything else you've never done? Like, I don't know, have you ever gone swimming? Or, like, blown out candles on a birthday cake? Of course I've been swimming, I say, irritated. Swimming was an important part of my tactical training, but I've never... I clear my throat. No, I never had my own birthday cake. Jesus. What is wrong with you? Hey, Kenji says suddenly. Do you even know who Bruce Lee is? I hesitate. There's a challenge in his voice, but Kenji isn't generating much more in the way of emotional cues, so I don't understand the importance of the question. Finally, I say, Bruce Lee was an actor, though he's also considered to be one of the greatest martial artists of our time. He founded a system of martial arts called Jeet Kune Do, a type of Chinese kung fu that eschews patterns and form. His Chinese name is Li Junfan. Well, shit, Kenji says. He sits back in his chair, staring at me like I might be an alien. Okay, I wasn't expecting that. What does Bruce Lee have to do with anything? First of all, he says, holding up a finger, Bruce Lee has everything to do with everything. And second of all, can you just, like, do that? He snaps his fingers in the direction of my head. Can you just, like, remember shit like that? Random facts? They're not random facts, it's information. Information about our world, its fears, histories, fascinations, and pleasures. It's my job to know this sort of thing. But you've never seen a single movie? I didn't have to. I know enough about pop culture to know which films mattered or made a difference. Kenji shakes his head, looks at me with something like awe. But you don't know anything about the best films. You never saw the really good stuff. Hell, you've probably never even heard of the good stuff. Try me. Have you ever heard of Blue Streak? I blink at him. That's the name of a movie? Romeo Must Die? Bad Boys? Rush Hour? Rush Hour 2? Rush Hour 3? Actually, Rush Hour 3 wasn't that great. Tangled? That last one, I believe, is a cartoon about a girl with very long hair inspired by the German fairy tale Rapunzel. Kenji looks like he might be choking. A cartoon? He says, outraged. Tangled is not a cartoon. Tangled is one of the greatest movies of all time. It's about fighting for freedom and true love. Please, I say, running a tired hand across my face. I really don't care what kinds of cartoons you like to watch in your free time. I only want to know why you're so certain I was making a mistake today. Kenji sighs so deeply, his shoulders sag. He slumps down in his chair. I can't believe you've never seen Men in Black. Or Independence Day. He looks up at me, his eyes bright. Shit, you'd love Independence Day. Will Smith punches an alien in the face, for God's sake. It's so good. I stare blankly at him. My dad and I used to watch movies all the time, he says quietly. My dad loved movies. Kenji only allows himself to feel his grief for a moment. But when he does, it hits me in a wild, desperate wave. I'm so sorry for your loss, I say quietly. Yeah, well, Kenji runs a hand over his face, rubs at his eyes and sighs. Anyway, do whatever you want. I just think you should buy her a ring or something before you get down on one knee. I wasn't planning on getting down on one knee. What? He frowns. Why not? That seems illogical. Kenji laughs, rolls his eyes. Listen, just trust me and at least pick out a ring first. Let her know you actually thought about it. Think it through for a beat, you know? I did think it through. For what, 5 seconds? Or did you mean that you were planning this proposal while you were being poisoned in prison? Kenji laughs. Bro, you literally saw her for the first time today, like 2 hours ago, after 2 weeks of being apart. And you think proposing to her is a rational, clear-headed move? Kenji shakes his head. Just take some time. Think about it. Make some plans. And then, suddenly, his reaction makes sense to me. You don't think she's going to say yes? I sit back, stunned. Look at the wall. You think she'll refuse me? What? I never said that. But it's what you think, isn't it? Listen, he says and sighs. I have no idea what she'll say. I really don't. I mean, I think it's more than obvious that she loves you. And I think if she's ready to call herself the Supreme Commander of North America, she's probably ready to handle something as big as this, but... He rubs his chin, looks away. I mean, yeah, I think maybe you should, like, think about it for a minute. I stare at him, consider his words. Finally, I say, you think I should get her a ring? Kenji smiles at the floor. He seems to be fighting back a laugh. Yeah, I do. I don't know anything about jewelry. He looks up, his eyes bright with humor. Don't worry, I'm sure the files in that thick head of yours have tons of information on this sort of thing. But the plane gives a sudden, unexpected jolt and I'm thrown backward in my seat. Kenji and I stare at each other for a protracted second, caution giving way to fear, fear building slowly into panic. The plane jolts again, this time harder. And then once more. That's not turbulence, I say. Kenji swears loudly and jumps to his feet. He scans the dashboard for a second before turning back, his head in a vice-like grip between his hands. I can't read these dials, he says. I have no idea how to read these goddamn dials. I shove the cockpit door open just as Nazira runs forward. She pushes her way past me to scan the dashboard, and when she pulls away, she looks suddenly terrified.
"We've lost one of our engines," she says, her words barely a whisper. "Someone is shooting us out of the sky."
"What? How is that?" But there's no time to discuss it, and Nazira and I hardly have a chance to try to figure out a way to fix it before the plane jolts once more, and this time the emergency oxygen masks fall out of their overhead compartments. Sirens are wailing. Lights overhead blink rapidly, insistent, sharp beeps warning us that the system is crashing.
"We have to try to land the plane," Nazira is saying. "We have to figure out..." "Shit," she says.
She covers her mouth with one hand.
"We just lost another engine."
"So we're just going to fall out of the goddamn sky?" This from Kenji. "We can't land the plane," I say, my heart beating furiously even as I try to keep a level head. "Not like this. Not when we're missing two engines. Not while they're still shooting at us."
"So what do we do?"
she says. It's Ella at the door who says quietly,
"We have to jump."
Ella. "What?" The three of them turn to face me. "What are you talking about?" Kenji says.
"Love, that's really not a good idea. We don't have any parachutes on this plane, and without them..."
"No, she's right,"
Nazira says carefully. She's looking me in the eye. She seems to understand what I'm thinking. "It'll work," I say, "don't you think?"
"Honestly, I have no idea,"
she says.
"But it's definitely worth a shot. It might be our only shot."
Kenji is beginning to pace.
"Okay, someone needs to tell me what the hell is going on."
Aaron has gone pale.
"Love,"
he says again.
"What?"
"Nazira can fly," I explain. "If we all find a way to secure ourselves to one another, she can use her powers to bolster us. You can use your power to bolster her power. And because there's little chance either of you could use that much of your strength while still carrying our combined weight, we'll eventually, slowly, be dragged down to the ground." Nazira glances at the dash again.
"We're 8,000 feet in the air and losing altitude quickly. If we're going to do this, we should jump now, while the plane is still relatively stable."
"Wait. Where are we?" Kenji says. "Where are we going to land?"
"I'm not sure," she says. "But it looks like we're somewhere over the general vicinity of sectors 200 through 300.
She looks at Aaron.
"Do you have any friends in this region?"
Aaron shoots her a dark look.
"I have friends nowhere. Zero people skills," Kenji mutters.
"We're out of time," I say. "Are we going to do this?"
"I guess so. It's the only plan we've got," Kenji says.
"I think it's a solid plan,"
Aaron says, and shoots me a hesitant but encouraging look.
"But I think we should find a way to strap ourselves together, some kind of harness or something, so we don't lose each other in the air."
"We don't have time for that." Nazira's calm is quickly giving way to panic.
"We'll just have to hold on tight."
Kenji nods, and with a sudden heave, shoves open the airplane door. Air rushes in fast and hard, nearly knocking us off our feet. Quickly, we all link arms, Nazira and Aaron holding up the outer edges, and with a few reassuring shouts through the howling wind, we jump. It's a terrifying sensation. The wind pushes up fast and hard, and then all at once, stills. We seem to be frozen in time, whirring in place even as we watch the jet fall steadily into the distance. Nazira and Aaron appear to be doing their jobs almost too well. We're not falling fast enough, and not only is it freezing up here, oxygen is scarce.
"I'm going to drop my hold on your power,"
Aaron calls out to Nazira, and she shouts back her agreement. Slowly, we begin to descend. I watch as the world blurs around us. We drift downward, unhurried, the wind pushing hard against our feet. And then, suddenly, the bottom seems to drop out from under us and we go shooting down hard into the terrain below. I give out a single terrified scream. Or was that Kenji? Before we pull to a sudden stop, a foot above the ground. Aaron squeezes my arm and I look at him, grateful for the catch. And then we fall to the ground. I land badly on my ankle and wince, but I can put weight on my foot so I know it's all right. I look around to assess the state of my friends, but realize too late that we're not alone. We're in a vast, wide-open field. This was, once upon a time, almost certainly farmland, but it's now been reduced to little more than ash. In the distance appears a thin band of people quickly closing in on us. I harness my powers, ready to fight, ready to face whatever comes our way. Energy is thrumming inside me, sparking in my blood. I am not afraid. Aaron puts his arm around me, pulls me close. "Together," he whispers, "no matter what." Finally, after what feels like immeasurable minutes, two bodies separate from their group. Slowly, they walk up to us. My whole body is tense in preparation for an attack, but as they get closer, I'm able to discern their faces. They're two adults. One, a slender, stunning woman with closely cropped hair and skin so dark it gleams. She's luminous as she walks, her smile widening with every step. Beside her is another smiling face, but the familiar sight of his brown skin and long dreadlocks sends shock and panic and hope rushing through me. I feel dazed. Castle. His presence here could be either good or bad. 1,000 questions run through my mind. Among them, what is he doing here? How did he get here? The last time I saw him, I didn't think he was on my side at all. Has he turned against us completely? The woman is the first to speak.
"I'm glad to see you're all right," she says. "I'm afraid we had no choice but to shoot your plane out of the sky."
"What? What are you..."
"Castle."
Kenji's quiet, tentative voice reaches out from behind me. Castle steps forward just as Kenji moves toward him, and the two embrace, Castle pulling him in so tightly I can practically feel the tension from where I'm standing. They're both visibly emotional, and the moment is so touching it puts my fears at ease.
"You're okay," Kenji says. "I thought..."
Hader and Stefan, the son of the Supreme Commander of Africa, step out of the crowd. Shock seizes my body at the sight of them. They nod at Nazira, and the three of them separate to form a new group off to the side. They speak in low, hurried whispers. Castle takes a deep breath.
"We have a lot to talk about."
And then to me, he says,
"Ella, I'd like you to meet my daughter, Noria."
My eyebrows fly up my forehead. I glance at Aaron, who seems as stunned as I am, but Kenji lets out a sudden whoop and tackles Castle all over again. The two of them laugh. Kenji is saying,
"No way, no way!"
Noria pointedly ignores them and smiles at me. "We call our home the sanctuary," she says. "My wife and I are the leaders of the resistance here. Welcome." Another woman separates from the crowd and steps forward. She's petite with long blonde hair. She shakes my hand. "It's an honor to meet you," she says. "My name is Samantha." I study both of them. Noria and Samantha standing side by side. Castle's happiness, the smile on Kenji's face, the cluster of Nazira, Hader, and Stefan off to the side. The larger group crowded in the distance. "The honor is ours," I say, and smile. Then, "But are we safe out here? Out in the open like this?" Noria nods.
"My powers allow me to manipulate light in unusual ways," she says. "I've cast a protective shield around us right now, so that if someone were to look in our direction, they'd see only a painful brightness that would force them to look away." "Whoa."
Kenji's eyes widen.
"That's cool."
"Thank you," Noria says. She's practically emanating light, her dark brown skin shimmering even as she stands still. There's something breathtaking about just being near her.
"Are those your people?"
I hear Aaron say, speaking for the first time. He's peering over her head at the small crowd in the distance. She nods.
And are they here to make sure we don't hurt you?
Noria smiles.
They're here to make sure no one hurts you, she says.
Your group is welcome here. You've more than proven yourselves worthy. And then? We've heard all the stories about Sector 45. You have? I say, surprised. I thought the reestablishment buried everything. Noria shakes her head. Whispers travel faster than anyone can control. The continent is buzzing with the news of all you've been doing these past couple of months. It's truly a privilege to meet you, she says to me and holds out her hand. I've been so inspired by your work. I take her hand, feeling at once proud and embarrassed. Thank you, I say quietly. That's very kind of you. But then Noria's eyes grow somber. I am sorry we had to shoot you out of the sky, she says. That must have been terrifying. But Castle assured me that there were two among you who would be able to fly.
Wait, what?
Kenji hazards a look at Castle. You planned this?
It was the only way, he says. Once we were able to get free of the asylum.
He nods gratefully at Nazira.
I knew the only place left for us was here, with Noria. But we couldn't have radioed to tell you to land here. Our communication would have been intercepted. And we couldn't have you land at the airbase for obvious reasons. So we've been tracking your plane, waiting for the right moment. Shooting you out of the sky punts the problem straight back to the military. They'll think it was action from another unit, and by the time they begin to figure it out, we'll have destroyed all evidence of our being here.
So, wait, I say. How did you and Noria coordinate this? How'd you find each other? And then, Castle, if you've abandoned the citizens, won't Anderson just murder them all? Shouldn't you have stayed to protect them, tried to fight back? He shakes his head.
We had no choice but to evacuate Omega Point members from Sector 45. After the two of you,
he nods at me and Aaron,
were taken, things fell into complete chaos. We were all taken hostage and thrown in prison. It was only because of Nazira, who connected us with Hader and Stefan, that we were able to make our way here. Sector 45 has since been returned to its original state as a prison.
Castle takes a tight breath.
There's a great deal we need to share with each other. So much has happened in the last 2 weeks, it'll be impossible to discuss it all quickly. But it is important that you know, right now, a little bit about Noria's role in all this.
He turns to Noria and gives her a small nod. Noria looks me in the eye and says,
That day you were shot on the beach, she says quietly. Do you remember?
I hesitate. Of course.
I was the one who issued that order against you.
I'm so stunned I visibly flinch.
What?
Aaron steps forward, outraged.
Castle, are you insane? You ask us to take refuge in the home of a person who nearly murdered Ella?
He turns back, stares at me with a wild look in his eyes.
How could you?
Castle? There's a warning in Kenji's voice.
What is going on?
But Noria and Castle are staring at each other, and a heavy look passes between them. Finally, Castle sighs.
Let's get settled before we keep talking,
he says.
This is a long conversation, and it's an important one. Let's have it now,
Aaron says.
Yes, Kenji says angrily, now.
She tried to murder me, I say, finally finding my voice. Why would you bring me here? What are you trying to do?
You've had a long, difficult journey, Castle says. I want you to have a chance to get settled, take a shower and eat some food, and then, I promise, we'll give you all the answers you want.
But how can we trust that we'll be safe? I say. How can we know Noria isn't trying to hurt us?
Because, she says steadily, I did what I did to help you.
And how is that plausible?
Aaron says sharply.
It was the only way I knew how to get a message to you, Noria says, still staring at me. I was never trying to kill you, and I knew that your own defenses would help protect you from certain death. That was a dangerous bet to make. Believe me, she says quietly, it was a difficult decision to make. It came at great cost to us. We lost one of our own in the process. I feel myself tense, but otherwise betray no emotion. I remember the day Nazira saved me, the day she killed my assailant. But I had to reach you, Noria says, her dark brown eyes deep with feeling. It was the only way I could do it without rousing suspicion. My curiosity beats out my skepticism, for the moment. So why? Why did you do it? I ask. Why poison me? Unexpectedly, Noria smiles. I needed you to see what I saw. And according to Castle, it worked. What worked? Ella, she hesitates. May I call you by your real name? I blink, stare at Castle. You told her about me?
He didn't have to. Things don't stay secret for very long around here, Noria says. No matter what the reestablishment has you believe, we're all finding ways to pass messages to each other. All the resistance groups across the globe know the truth about you by now, and they love you more for it.
I don't know what to say. Ella, she says softly, I was able to figure out why your parents have kept your sister a secret for so long, and I just wanted to...
I already know, I say, the words coming out quietly. I haven't talked to anyone about this yet. Haven't told a soul. There's been no time to discuss something this big, no time to have a long conversation, but I guess we're going to have it now. Noria is staring at me, stunned.
You know?
Emmeline told me everything. A hush falls over the crowd. Everyone turns to look at me, even Hader, Stefan, and Nazira finally stop talking amongst themselves long enough to stare. She's kept in captivity, I say. She lives in a holding tank where she exists almost permanently underwater. Her brain waves are connected to tidal turbines that convert the kinetic energy of her mind into electricity. Evie, my mother, found a way to harness that electricity and project it outward all over the world. I take a deep breath. Emmeline is stronger than I've ever been or ever will be. She has the power to bend the minds of the people. She can warp and distort realities. Here. Everywhere. Kenji's face is a perfect encapsulation of horror, and his expression is reflected on dozens of other faces around me. Nazira, on the other hand, looks stricken. What you see here, I say. Around us, the decay of society, the broken atmosphere, the birds gone from the sky, it's all an illusion. It's true that our climate has changed. Yes, we've done serious damage to the atmosphere, to the animals, to the planet as a whole. But that damage is not irreparable. Scientists were hopeful that, with a careful, concerted effort, we could fix our Earth, save the future. But the reestablishment didn't like that angle, he says. They didn't want the people to hope. They wanted people to think that our Earth was beyond salvation. And with Emmeline, they were able to do just that.
Why?
Kenji says, stunned.
Why would they do that? What do they gain?
Desperate, terrified people, Noria says solemnly, are much easier to control. They used Ella's sister to create the illusion of irreversible devastation. And then they preyed upon the weak and the hopeless and convinced them to turn to the reestablishment for support.
Emmeline and I were designed for something called Operation Synthesis. She was meant to be the architect of the world, and I was to be the executioner. But Emmeline is dying. They need another powerful weapon with which to control the people. A contingency, a backup plan. Aaron takes my hand. The reestablishment wanted me to replace my sister, I say.
For the first time, Noria has gone still. No one knew this part. No one but me.
How? She says. You have such different abilities.
It's Castle who says,
It's easy to imagine, actually.
But he looks terrified.
If they were to magnify Ella's powers the way they did her sister's, she would become the equivalent of a human atom bomb. She could cause mass destruction, excruciating pain, death when they please, across tremendous distances.
We have no choice.
Nazira's voice rings out sharp and clear.
We have to kill Evie.
And I'm looking out, far into the distance when I say, quietly, I already did. A collective gasp goes through the crowd. Aaron goes still beside me. And now, I say, I have to kill my sister. It's what she wants. It's the only way.
Warner. Nuria's headquarters are both strange and beautiful. They have no need to hide underground, because she's found a way to imbue objects with her power, an evolution of our abilities even Castle hadn't foreseen. The sanctuary's campsite is protected by a series of 20-foot-tall pole lights that border the edges of the clearing. Fused with Nuria's power, the lights work together as a barrier that makes it impossible to look in the direction of their campsite. She says her abilities not only have the power to blind, but that she can also use light to warp sounds. So they live here, out in the open, their words and actions protected in plain sight. Only those who know the location can find their way here. Nuria says that the illusion has kept them safe for years. The sun begins its descent as we make our way toward the campsite. The vast, unusually green field dotted with cream-colored tents. And the scene is so breathtaking, I can't help but stop to appreciate the view. Fire streaks across the sky, golden light flooding the air and earth. It feels both beautiful and bleak, and I shiver as a gust of wind wraps around my body. Ella takes my hand. I look at her, surprised, and she smiles at me, the fading sun glinting in her eyes. I feel her fear, her hope, her love for me. But there's something else, too. Something like pride. It's faint, but it's there. And it makes me so happy to see her like this. She should be proud. I can speak for myself, at least, when I say that I've never been so proud of her. But then I always knew she would go on to greatness. It doesn't surprise me at all that even after everything she's been through, after all the horrors she's had to face, she's still managed to inspire the world. She's one of the strongest people I've ever known. My father might be back from the dead, and Sector 45 might be out of our hands, but Ella's impact can't be ignored. Nuria says that no one really believed that she was actually dead, but now that it's official, now that word has spread that Ella is still alive, she's become more notorious than ever. Nuria says that the rumbles underground are already getting stronger. People are more desperate to act, to get involved, and to stand up to the reestablishment. Resistance groups are growing. The civilians are finding ways to get smarter, to get stronger together. And Ella has given them a figure to rally around. Everyone is talking about her. She's become a symbol of hope for so many. I squeeze Ella's hand, returning her smile, and when her cheeks flush with color, I have to fight back the urge to pull her into my arms. She amazes me more every day. My conversation with Kenji is still, despite everything, at the forefront of my mind. Things always feel so desperate these days that I feel a new, nagging insistence that this window of calm might be my only chance at happiness. We're almost constantly at war, either fighting for our lives or on the run, and there's no guarantee of a future. No guarantee that I'll live to see another year. No promise to grow old. It makes me feel like... I stop suddenly, and Ella nearly stumbles.
Are you okay?
She says, squeezing my hand. I nod. I offer her a distracted smile and vague apology as we begin walking again, but I run the numbers once more. Finally, I say without looking up, Does anyone happen to know what day it is? And someone responds,
A voice from the group I can't be bothered to identify, confirming what I already thought might be true. My father wasn't lying.
Tomorrow is my birthday.
I'll be 20 years old.
Tomorrow.
The revelation thunders through me. This birthday feels like more of a milestone than usual because my life, exactly 1 year ago, was nearly unrecognizable. Almost everything in my life is different now. 1 year ago, I was a different person. I was in an awful, self-destructive relationship with a different person. 1 year ago, my anxiety was so crippling that 5 minutes alone with my own mind would leave me spiraling for days. I relied entirely upon my routines and schedules to keep me tethered to the endless horrors of my job and its demands. I was inflexible beyond reason. I was hanging on to humanity by a thread. I felt both wild and nearly out of my mind all the time. My private thoughts and fears were so dark that I spent nearly all my free hours either exercising in my shooting range or in the bowels of Sector 45, running training simulations that I'm not proud to admit. I designed specifically to experience killing myself over and over again. That was 1 year ago. Less than a year ago. Somehow it feels like a lifetime ago. And when I think back on who I was and what that version of myself thought my life would be like today, I'm left deeply and profoundly humbled. Today is not forever. Happiness does not happen. Happiness must be uncovered, separated from the skin of pain. It must be claimed, kept close, protected.
Would you prefer a chance to shower and change before reuniting with the others?
Nuria is saying. Her voice is sharp and clear, and it shakes me from my reverie. Yes, I say quickly. I'd really appreciate the time to rest.
No problem. We meet for dinner in the main tent in 2 hours. I'll show you to your new residences.
She hesitates.
I hope you'll forgive me for being presumptuous, but I assumed the two of you,
she looks at me and Ella,
would like to share a space, but of course if that's not... Yes, thank you,
Ella says quickly. Her cheeks are already pink.
We're grateful for your thoughtfulness.
Nuria nods. She seems pleased. And then she turns to Kenji and Nazira and says,
if you'd like, I can arrange to join your separate rooms so that you...
Kenji and Nazira respond at the same time. What? No,
absolutely not. Oh, I'm so sorry,
Nuria says quickly.
My apologies, I shouldn't have assumed.
For the first time ever, Nazira looks flustered. She can hardly get out the words when she says,
why would you think we'd want to share a room?
Nuria shakes her head. She shares a quick, confused glance with Castle, but seems suddenly mortified.
I don't know. I'm sorry. You seemed...
Separate rooms are perfect, Kenji says sharply.
Great,
Nuria says a little too brightly.
I'll lead the way.
And I watch, amused, as Castle tries and fails to hide a smile. Our residence, as Nuria called it, is more than I could have hoped for. I thought we'd be camping. Instead, inside of each tent is a miniature, self-contained home. There's a bed, a small living area, a tiny kitchen, and a full bathroom. The furnishings are spare but bright, well-made and clean. And when Ella walks in, slips off her shoes, and throws herself backward onto the bed, I can almost imagine us together like this, maybe someday, in our own home. The thought sends a wave of disorienting euphoria through my body. And then, fear. It seems like tempting fate to even hope for a happiness like that. But there's another part of me, a small but insistent part of me, that clings to that hope nonetheless. Ella and I overcame what I once thought impossible. I never dreamed she'd still love me once she knew everything about me. I never dreamed that the heartbreak and horrors of recent events would only bring us closer, or that my love for her could somehow increase tenfold in 2 weeks. I grew up thinking that the joys of this world were for other people to enjoy. I was certain that I was fated to a bleak, solitary life, forever barred from the contentment offered by human connection. But now,
Ella yawns, soundlessly, hugging a pillow to her chest as she curls up on her side. Her eyes close. A smile tugs at my mouth as I watch her. I'm still amazed at how just the sight of her could bring me so much peace. She shifts again, burrowing more deeply into the pillows, and I realize she must be exhausted. And as much as I'd love to pull her into my arms, I decide to give her space. I back away quietly, and instead use the time to explore the rest of our new, temporary home. I'm still surprised by how much I like it. We have more privacy here in these new headquarters than we ever did before. More freedom. Here, I'm a visitor, welcome to take my time showering and resting before dinner. No one expects me to run their world. I have no correspondence to attend to, no awful tasks to attend to, no civilians to oversee, no innocence to torture. I feel so much freer now that someone else has taken the reins. It's both alien and wonderful. It feels so good to have space with Ella. Literal and figurative space to be ourselves, to be together, to simply be and breathe. Ella and I shared my bedroom back on base, but it never felt like home there. Everything was cold, sterile. I hated that building, hated that room, hated every minute of my life. Those walls, my own personal rooms, were suffocating, infused with awful memories. But here, even though the room is small, the tight quarters manage to be cozy. This place feels fresh and new and serene. The future doesn't seem improbable here. Hope doesn't feel ridiculous. It feels like a chance to begin again. And it doesn't feel dangerous to dream that one day, Ella might be mine in every way. My wife, my family, my future. I've never, ever dared to think of it. But my hope is snuffed out just as quickly as it appeared. Kenji's warnings flash through my mind, and I feel suddenly agitated. Apparently, proposing to Ella is more complicated than I'd originally thought it might be. Apparently, I need some kind of plan. A ring. A moment on one knee. It all sounds ridiculous to me. I don't even know why it sounds ridiculous exactly, just that it doesn't feel like me. I don't know how to put on a performance. I don't want to make a scene. I'd find it excruciating to be so vulnerable in front of other people or in an unfamiliar setting. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. Still, these problems seem surmountable in the pursuit of forever with her. I would get on one knee if Ella wanted me to. I'd propose in a room filled with her closest friends if that was what she needed. No, my fear is something much greater than that. The thing Kenji said to me today that rattled me to my core was the possibility that Ella might say no. It's unconscionable that it never occurred to me that she might say no. Of course she might say no. She could be uninterested for any number of reasons. She might not be ready, for example. Or she might not be interested in the institution of marriage as a whole. Or, I think, she simply might not want to tether herself to me in such a permanent way. The thought sends a chill through my body. I suppose I assumed she and I were on the same page emotionally. But my assumptions in this department have landed me in trouble more times than I'd like to admit. And the stakes are too high now not to take Kenji's concern seriously. I'm not prepared to acknowledge the damage it would do to my heart if she rejected my proposal. I take a deep, sharp breath. Kenji said I need to get her a ring. So far, he's been right about most of the things I've done wrong in our relationship, so I'm inclined to believe he might have a point. But I have no idea where I'd be able to conjure up a ring in a place like this. Maybe if we were back home, where I was familiar with the area and its artisans. But here? It's almost too much to think about right now. There's so much to think about, in fact, that I can't quite believe I'm even considering something like this at a time like this. I haven't even had a moment to reconcile the apparent regeneration of my father, or literally any of the other new, outrageous revelations our families have thrown at us. We're in the middle of a fight for our lives. We're fighting for the future of the world. I squeeze my eyes shut. Maybe I really am an idiot. 5 minutes ago, the end of the world seemed like the right reason to propose, to take everything I can in this transitory world and grieve nothing. but suddenly it feels like this really might be an impulsive decision. Maybe this isn't the right time after all. Maybe Kenji was right. Maybe I'm not thinking clearly. Maybe losing Ella and regaining all these memories, maybe it's made me irrational. I push off the wall, trying to clear my head. I wander the rest of the small space, taking stock of everything in our tent, and peer into the bathroom. I'm relieved to discover that there's real plumbing. In fact, the more I look around, the more I realize that this isn't a tent at all. There are actual floors and walls and a single vaulted ceiling in this room, as if each unit is actually a small freestanding building. The tents seem to be draped over the entire structure, and I wonder if they serve a more practical purpose that's not immediately obvious. Several years, Nuria said. Several years they've lived here and made this their home. They really found a way to make something out of nothing. The bathroom is a nice size, spacious enough for two people to share, but not big enough for a bathtub. Still, when we first approached the clearing, I wasn't even sure they'd have proper facilities or running water, so this is more than I could have hoped for. And the more I stare at the shower, the more I'm suddenly desperate to rinse these weeks from my skin. I always took pains to stay clean, even in prison, but it's been too long since I've had a hot shower with steady running water, and I can hardly resist the temptation now. And I've already stripped off most of my clothes when I hear Ella call my name, her still sleepy voice carrying over from what serves as our bedroom, or bed space. It's not really a room as much as it is an area designated for a bed. Yes? I call back.
Where do you go?
She says. I thought I might take a shower. I try to say without shouting. I've just stepped out of my underwear and into the standing shower, but I turn the dials in the wrong direction and cold water sprays from the showerhead. I jump backward even as I hurry to undo my mistake, and nearly collide with Ella in the process. Ella, who's suddenly standing behind me. I don't know whether it's habit, instinct, or self-preservation, but I grab a towel from a nearby shelf and quickly press it against my exposed body. I don't even understand why I'm suddenly self-conscious. I never feel uncomfortable in my own skin. I like the way I look naked. This moment wasn't one I'd anticipated, and I feel defenseless. Hi, love, I say, taking a quick breath. I remember to smile. I didn't see you standing there. Ella crosses her arms, pretending to look mad, but I can see the effort she's making to fight back a smile.
Aaron, she says sternly, you were going to take a shower without me?
My eyebrows fly up, surprised. For a moment, I don't know what to say, and then carefully, would you like to join me? She steps forward, wraps her arms around my waist, and stares up at me with a sweet, secret smile. The look in her eyes is enough to make me think about dropping the towel. I whisper her name, my heart heavy with emotion. She pulls me closer, gently touching her lips to my chest, and I go uncomfortably still. Her kisses grow more intent, her lips leaving a trail of fire across my chest, down my torso, and feeling rushes through my veins, sets me on fire. Suddenly, I forget why I was ever holding a towel. I don't even know when it falls to the floor. I slip my arms around her, reel her in. She feels incredible, her body fitting against me perfectly, and I tilt her face up. My hand caught somewhere behind her neck and the base of her jaw, and I kiss her, soft and slow, heat filling my blood with dangerous speed. I pull her tighter and she gasps, stumbles, and takes an accidental step back, and I catch her, pressing her against the wall behind her. I bunch up the hem of her dress and in one smooth motion yank it upward, my hand slipping under the material to skim the smooth skin of her waist, to grip her hip, hard. I part her legs with my thigh, and she makes a soft, desperate sound deep in her throat. And it does something to me, to feel her like this, to hear her like this, to be assaulted by endless waves of her pleasure and desire. It drives me insane. I bury my face in her neck, my hands moving up under her dress to feel her skin, hot and soft and sensitive to my touch. I've missed her so much.
I've missed her body under my hands, missed the scent of her skin, and the soft, feather-light whisper of her hair against my body.
I kiss her neck, trying to ignore the tension in my muscles or